Hey, Husky fans, welcome back to 4th and Inches, the Husky podcast. My name is Trevor Mueller. With me is Jake Grant and Coach V, and the Sugar Bowl is upon us. We're going down to New Orleans, and we're that was bad.
I loved it.
Well, the Sugar Bowl part was okay. So, Washington, the number two team in the country, headed all the way to New Orleans to play the Texas Longhorns, led by Steve Sarkisian. We got a lot of stuff to talk about with this game. But first off, I mean, how awesome has it been? We've all been watching bowl season. Every single time you see a bowl game, whether it's halftime, you see it every commercial break, you see the purple and gold, you see Michael Penix, you see Roma Dunze, you see Kalen DeBoer, you're seeing the Washington W all over the place. It gives me so much happiness, and frankly, I've watched a lot more halftime shows because of it. Jake, just your take on where we're at right now.
Yeah, you do see a lot of purple and gold, unless you go to the ESPN website, and then you see crimson and silver, and then you see, you know, you go to Washington's page on ESPN here, and it's just plastered full of Texas stuff, and that's a little irritating. But as far as
ESPN's going to ESPN, dude.
Yeah, ESPN does. Yeah,
no Bristol's going to Bristol.
Yeah, no matter how it happens, man, they're going to turn it to be something else. But it's been exciting. It's been a lot of fun to watch the national narrative talk about Michael Penix and was he a Heisman snub and not just talk about how Washington can just huck the ball around the field. You're listening to national pundits talk about how we are a balanced team top to bottom. We can run the ball. We have a 1,000-yard rusher, and we have a defense to boot. We had a defense that essentially shut down Oregon to their lowest point totals in twice this season. And this defense has won them more than two games. They won the Arizona State game and a couple of other, the Apple Cup, essentially the defense won them that game outside of a crazy fourth down play. So to hear the national news and ESPN and all these experts, so-called experts, talk about how Washington is such a more balanced team and how they can compete with these upper echelon top tier teams, has it's been fun to watch, because we've known it all year. We've known it since the beginning of last year that this team was at ready for this stage, and to see it come nationally is really cool. It's a great take.
And now, Coach, the Chiron writers and the editors haven't necessarily caught on to how good Washington actually is, but have you noticed a change in some of the narratives with the talking heads during the halftime shows and even some previews that you've seen, whether that's on YouTube or podcast?
It's starting to come around, and this is kind of like the news cycle. Like, you know, if you have a few weeks leading up to a game, it's going to go in one direction, then it's going to swing back to the other one, and it'll probably go back the other way. I find it interesting that these halftime shows are the most interesting part of 90% of these bowl games. And, you know, you can thank opting out, NIL, transfer portal, whatever you want to blame. But these have been some of the worst games I've ever forced myself to sit down and watch, including tonight's fiasco.
Yeah.
I made some rather interesting tweets about that game tonight. We don't have to talk about him now. But we got to see our good friend Lincoln Kienholz be thrust into the national spotlight, deer in the headlights, look on his face. It was kind of like watching Mike Hawkins coach an offensive set. Go Dogs.
Or Ryan Day coach an offensive scheme.
Yeah, but at least Hopkins had all his guys almost. So should have beat the Buffaloes tonight.
Yep.
No, but I mean, honestly, anybody who's watched us, our team this year, knows we can play. And they're just, I think a lot of people are kind of eager to see how these teams match up. I thought when this was announced, I thought this was the team that was closest to playing Oregon, with maybe a few differences here or there as far as like size and talent up front. They do a lot of the same things. I think this is a really good matchup for us. And I don't know if the rest of the country wants to hear it yet, because Texas is the big brand, and you know, they've been waiting to scream Texas is back for like 30 years. So eventually,
I thought Sam Ehlinger said that like 5 years ago already.
right after a Holiday Bowl victory.
Well, after Vince Young ran into the end zone at the Rose Bowl against USC, I think people just assumed that it was going to keep rolling like that. They were going to
The year Jake and I graduated from high school.
Awesome.
Yeah.
No, like people envisioned what Saban has built at Alabama. Like, that's what Texas is going to go back to. And it's like, no, but they're more than happy to spin the narrative that, oh man, they're so hyped up. They're so back. They've got this talent. They've got these guys, you know, their backup quarterback is Arch Manning and whatnot. It's, you know, and then you have Sark as the head coach. If there was ever a program destined to be propped up and hyped up, similar to what Oregon is for no good reason, then it's Texas.
Yeah, Texas played in a Big 12 that wasn't necessarily that exciting. I think the best thing to happen to the Big 12 was it's either Arizona as an incoming Big 12 team beating the pants off of Oklahoma late, or the Kansas State Wildcats devouring the life-size mascot of the Pop-Tart.
How much time do we want to spend on talking about this Pop-Tart deal?
I'll give you the floor for a minute. It was amazing.
I watched that as two different people. It was like an out-of-body experience. I'm watching this as the Pop-Tart is voluntarily sacrificing himself live into the toaster. I'm thinking to myself, there are like millions of small children who are catching this either live or on YouTube who are going to have nightmares, and their parents are going to have therapy bills for years. But then the cooked Pop-Tart comes out of the oven and the players just start eating pieces of him. He's been dead for 10 seconds. He was just waving to the crowd, smile on his face, holding a sign as they lowered him into the toaster. This is like some like cut scene from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. And now they're just stuffing him in the face. Like, I, as a player, I would be like, you know what? I'm good. The post-game spread in the locker room, it's fine.
Well, that being said, the Big 12 didn't do a ton for me this year. I've now watched most of Texas's games. I didn't watch the games that Quinn Ewer didn't play in because I don't think that's really the best representative of what they're going to be. I look at this Texas team and it's kind of a tired narrative at this point that it's probably Washington's best matchup. And while I agree with that in some ways, I think Washington's kind of a matchup nightmare for anybody that they play against just because of how good their offense is and how their defenses continue to improve over the course of the year. So I kind of want to put that to bed, but before we do, you know, Jake, what's your overall take on Texas as a whole?
I mean, they're a good football team. They're
right. Right. They're a top four team.
Are they?
They're top 18.
They made the CFP. So I guess that you have to say that they're a top four team.
Right.
You've been beaten on this drum since the day that it was announced that we were playing Texas, is that Texas is the second best team that Washington's going to play this year. And it's a second place to Oregon. Oregon would probably beat the brakes off of Texas. If Texas and Oregon were playing in this game, I think Oregon's favored by 7, maybe 7.5. Because it's Washington now. Texas has now taken over a 4-point favorite. They got some big physical dudes up front on both sides of the line, offense and defense. Their defensive line is pretty stout. The thing about Texas that I'd say the thing that makes me the most nervous about Texas is the ability to run the football. You know, they had Jonathan Brooks. He was a 1,000-yard rusher. Unfortunately, he tore his ACL. He's out for Texas. He was a 1,000-yard rusher by November 11th when he tore his ACL. So, which is pretty outstanding stat line if you really look at it. But then not only do they have him, but then they back it up, which now is their starter, with CJ Baxter, who is a 600-yard rusher on top of that. As a team, they have 2,500 rush yards. So if you're Washington's defense and you're looking at Texas's offense, you have to make them one-dimensional. And the thing to do in my opinion, is to do what we did against Oregon, which is take away the run game. We took away Bucky Irving, which to me, which we preached about before that game even started, was the most dynamic player in Oregon's offense. And I would say it's the exact same thing for Texas as well. CJ Baxter is the must-stop component for Washington's defense. I mean, look at how we match up. Our defensive line is big and stout and strong and has the ability to stop the run, which is exactly what Texas wants to do. And if they cannot just establish dominance early on the offensive line and can't run the ball, that makes a long day for Quinn Ewers. Everybody knows Quinn Ewers. He's a former five-star quarterback. He's completing at a ridiculously high rate this season. He's at a 70% clip. Texas, I'm going to keep saying it, it looks a lot like Oregon's offense, where they have a quarterback that has a high clip, a high percentage completion rate, and they're running the ball very efficiently. But the thing is, the one difference between Quinn Ewers and Bo Nix is that Quinn Ewers will take those shots downfield, and he has a nice deep ball, and he can complete those long passes, which, as we know, is kind of a bugaboo for that secondary of ours. Not Jabbar, but the rest of the guys have given up some deep passes. So, you know, when it comes to that offense, it's not going to be easy for Washington's defense to slow them down. I think they're going to have to focus on trying to make Texas one-dimensional offensively.
I mean, it comes back down to the RPO stuff, and Texas, as deep as they were into RPO last year, they're just as deep into it, if not more. They have Worthy, who can kind of loosen things up. He's their one like guy who, if he gets loose, then you really have to pray that he drops the ball last year. but no, Jatavion Sanders is one of the best tight ends in the country. The thing about the run game, though, is that when they lost Brooks, you know, he was a kid that was so explosive. He was averaging over 6 yards a carry. Baxter's about 4.6, something like that. So for me, it's finding a way to make sure that you've got Worthy under control, and then freeing up everybody else to just kind of sit in the intermediate zones. If you have your safeties playing, you know, too deep, you know, cover two shell, Ewers is going to ride that mesh and then hit Sanders, hit Mitchell, hit those guys down the seams. You got to get them off the field, because the more chances we give to our offense, the better it's going to be for us. Because everybody keeps talking about this Texas defense. They're not special. They have special players here and there. Their secondary is a mess. They're giving a true freshman, I think it's actually Jabbar Muhammad's cousin. They're giving this kid first team reps in the bowl prep. They're not good in the back end. If we have time to throw, they're done. Simple as that. And everybody's worried about running the ball up the middle. We don't have to run the ball in the A gap.
Yeah.
We can run these guys side to side. We can go play action. We can go boot action. We can get these guys running sideline to sideline.
Get the ball out to receivers early. There's plenty of things that they can do to extend the run game.
Exactly.
Well, and kind of to go on to your point, Coach, is the fact that that's kind of been Washington's bread and butter this year with DJ, is that stretch play to the outside where our receivers are phenomenal blockers downfield. So, I mean, to get Texas running sideline to sideline, get that defense tired, is going to do nothing but help Washington's offense later in the game.
I remember having a conversation with somebody in the offseason this last winter. And he's like, what's the one thing, you know, you did all these breakdowns on the offense, what's the one thing that you took away from it that you were really surprised about? And I kind of stunned these guys when I said, we lived on inside zone alone for our running game. And I know that has to do with personnel. You know, Wayne Talapapa and those guys were between the tackles runners. The outside zone, the stretch, the guard tackle counter stuff that we didn't use as much last year, I mean, we're just wiping people out on the perimeter. If we do that against Texas, I mean, we can beat anybody.
Now, an interesting storyline that I kind of thought about, Trevor, was for Washington, backup quarterback. Goodness gracious.
Dylan Morris.
Thank you. With Dylan Morris coming back for Washington, If Penix goes down, we have our backup. Texas, if Quinn Ewers goes down, Malik Murphy's in the transfer portal, just like Dylan Morris is, but he's not going with Texas to the Sugar Bowl or to the Sugar Bowl. So if something happens to starting quarterbacks, Texas is in really bad shape.
For sure. And the thing about Quinn Ewers that you guys have kind of been playing with a little bit, but haven't kind of said out loud, is the fact that when he gets hurried up, when there's bodies around him in the intermediate route, you're talking about the shell coach. When there's bodies around the intermediate route, he's very gun shy about making those throws. He's kind of become a lot more careful with where he goes. Therefore, he goes to the check down quite a bit. He hasn't been as accurate with the deep ball as he should be with the talent that he has with his arm. And some of that's Xavier Worthy being a little bit smaller. But I think the way that Washington's going to try to attack this is really try to highlight the middle of the field with the linebackers that they have. And, you know, Mish Powell in the middle, in that intermediate area, to just create traffic and make it a little bit tough. The window's a little bit smaller for Quinn Ewers to make those decisions and make it and throw those balls, because he has shown a tendency to be a little bit inaccurate. And I think that's where Washington's going to hopefully create some turnovers.
And that's an interesting point. And we were talking about this a little bit last time, but so what happened in Vegas? Washington kind of went back to the drawing board and said, they want to hit this quick stuff. They want to be ahead of the sticks. They want to be on schedule. So they played a lot more robber. They played a lot of like tricks and little disguise coverages in the middle. And you see Bo hold the ball and start to kind of freak out and panic a little bit. Ewers doesn't have that ability. Like, he's not an unathletic kid, but he's not Bo as far as a scrambler.
He's not so Bo Nix. And he, who would you rather have, Bo Nix or Quinn Ewers?
I mean, do I have to pick one? I think Bo probably. But what I'm saying is when Quinn, if he's going to wind up and take that deep shot, he's got to be on time. He's not one of those guys that can hold the ball, reset his feet, run around, and still make that pristine deep ball throw. Like, if you get him off schedule, it's in our favor. We got Bo off schedule, and he still battled back because he's a warrior. And quite honestly, we had some defensive lapses in that game as well. But if you can get him to just double take, come off of that primary, especially in the RPO, because you really only have like, I'm either going to hand it or I've got here. You don't usually get to the second and third options in RPO. And that's why it's a controlled passing game. It's safe. We're going to get to the openings of the zone. The worst thing we could possibly do is just sit back in a shell in a zone and just let them do whatever the hell they want.
Well, that's kind of what they did to us last year in the Alamo Bowl, and we just took advantage of it. We tried to force it downfield a few times, but when we started taking what Texas was giving, we just chunked down the field and ended up scoring 27 points and winning the game. One guy that we haven't mentioned yet is Adonai Mitchell, the 6'4" receiver who will be an issue for the secondary. My assumption is with him is I think you're going to see a little bit more of like a Dom Hampton physicality when it comes to being around him. I don't know if you bracket him because of the speed that Xavier Worthy possesses, but like Jamon Brohammad, as good of a cornerback as he is, he's 6 inches shorter than Adonai Mitchell. So how do you think that Texas tries to exploit that, coach? And how do you think Washington tries to go about it?
Mitchell is somebody I kind of targeted last year. Is like when they need a third down, when they need a big play to like extend the drive, he is their number one possession receiver. They trust him more than anybody else on the team. Great hands, great physicality. If anything, you know, he's not like guy who's going to take the top off of defense, but he might be like a Keenan Allen type guy. Big kid, athletic, great.
Don't love that.
He runs a lot of those like shallows, and he runs the crossers. He'll run digs, slants. Big tool off the RPO is that in breaking route. I mean, he's just going to find a way to be where he needs to be. I love him. Honestly, if we had a kid like that, I would be excited about that too. Cause you know, I feel like we've lived outside the numbers a lot this year. And without McMillan this year, that would have been the perfect, like, hey, send this guy down the seam type of dude. I like him a lot. I think he's their best pure receiver.
How do you think they go about trying to stop him?
Just depends on the coverage. Honestly, like you said, Dom's going to help out a little bit. The safeties are going to, maybe Cam Fab's in there. Maybe off the release, a linebacker's got him. Maybe they bracket that a little bit. But quite honestly, I mean, if they line him up outside, you just have to play him one-on-one because you can't take that other guy away from Worthy popping the top.
Well, and you can't adjust for Adonai being 6'4" because they have two other guys. They have two tight ends that are 6'4" and 6'5" as well. Texas, if I was a coach for Texas, an offensive coach for Texas, I would absolutely be banking on, look at the size difference that we have over this defensive Washington team. We have three guys that are over 6'4" and can catch the football. All three guys can catch the ball really well. Da'Tavion Sanders is Texas's third leading receiver as a tight end spot. So the ability to catch the ball is there, especially with size.
And Sanders might have the highest draft profile of any of those guys who catch the ball for them.
Yeah, and that's the issue, is they really go to three guys primarily. There's a pretty steep drop-off after those three. And they all possess a different issue for this Washington defense. And you guys can disagree with me or not, but it really does seem to come down to getting Quinn to be off of his mark and not be on time. Is that too rudimentary?
No, I totally think you're 100% accurate on that. You let Quinn sit in that pocket. If he has a pocket and he's upright all day, like he was against Oklahoma State, the Big 12 championship is a perfect example of that, where Quinn Ewers had all day to pick them apart and did. And versus Oklahoma, that made him run around with his head cut off. He looked rattled in that game. So the ability to get Quinn Ewers, not necessarily to the ground, but get his feet off of the marks that he wants, is going to be the difference between if you can win or lose this game, in my opinion.
And the thing is, we've got some pretty good edge rushers. I know Durfee's going to make his debut. Let's see how they utilize him. What that might do, because they've got the kid Banks at left tackle, who's a future top 10 pick, only a sophomore. He started as a true freshman last year. He's a future NFL dude. So that's going to be interesting to see if they played ZTF or Braylon over him for the majority of the game. Do they move these guys around? Are they interchangeable? If you can get meaningful reps out of Durfee, then you'll see a little bit more of what Morrell was doing with ZTF in the fourth quarter of the game in Vegas against Oregon, where he just moves him around, lines him up at Mike, flashes him into coverage, blitzes him in the A gap, just different things they can do to disguise what their pressures. And I fully expect that Braylon's going to have a good game, but if he's the decoy and you're running games off of like away from him, like tackle end stunts or whatever, if you're going to bring, you know, Eddie and Carson and Alfonso in the A gap, whatever you decide to do, you've got to flush him out of the pocket and you got to make him go left. I think that him rolling to his left and trying to throw back to the middle of the field, which is where most of the time he wants to go anyway, is a recipe for disaster for them.
So looking at the matchups, the one that I feel like Washington has the advantage in right now is the running, Texas's running game versus Washington's run defense. I think Washington, with a healthy Thule, with the running backs, I'm assuming that Carson Bruner, there's going to be a lot of rotation, but I think Carson's going to make some really big plays in the run game, as well as Eddie and Alfonso. But I think Washington has the edge there. The place that I'm the most worried about is that the tight end passing game. What do you guys see as strengths and weaknesses?
When you say that you know, our run defense versus their run offense, we're going to have to do it with seven guys.
Yeah.
It's just too hard to commit an extra body to, especially when the game is like, you know, early. It's, you can't commit an extra body there. And
expect- Well, let me ask you this then. How did it, you know a lot more than me about this. What did Washington do against Oregon?
Well, I said they played a little bit more robber coverages. A lot of times what teams will do against this RPO is play like not really a buck, but just like an overhang linebacker hybrid dude that kind of either comes up or he jumps into those zones where the most likely place to throw your RPO. That's really, you know, it'd be interesting. I'd love to be a fly on the wall in their meetings and see how they intend to handle that. But bottom line, it's going to come down to just, can we stop the run with seven? Can we make tackles in space? If we can do that, they become, you know, just another team. And we've seen, you know, we've seen Oregon, we've seen Arizona, we've seen, you know, teams on our schedule this year that could, you know, through USC obviously runs a lot of RPO and a lot of, you know, spread, you know, air raid stuff paired with power run. I don't think we defended it well in that game necessarily, but as the season went on, they did get better. And in Vegas, aside from one drive before the half where the refs handed them a touchdown, and then that fourth quarter, like one play touchdown debacle when we're up by 10, they really dominated that game for the most part. They sure there was plays here and there, but honestly, that could have been a 20-point victory. So I feel like the defense has gotten better. I feel like they're healthier now. I feel like they're smarter. Got to be able to stop the run with seven, though.
Two players that I'm keeping my eyes on for this game with the size that Texas has, either at receiver or tight end, is Dom Hampton. You'd mentioned him before, and Asa Turner. Both guys that are 6'3", both guys that can cover tight ends, both guys that can lay down the lumber. If Asa Turner gets a straight line shot at a tight end who is in the flats going to catch a ball, I fully expect Asa Turner to lay the boom to him and make the hard hit on him. That's what those big safeties and corners are there for, is that exact reason. And here's where you use them at their peak.
And depending on the flow of this game, we had that part of the season where everybody was hurt and we were playing some younger guys, but now that everybody's healthy, you've got experience, Mikael Esteen, Ace is back. Cam Fab played 10 times better than he did last year in his first time on the field. Dom is obviously a senior who wants to go out with a big win, obviously, the next couple of games. The size will definitely help. I know that we might not think about this, but EJ is not a small corner.
Yeah.
He's not. And hey, you know, even if it comes down to just, you know, contested balls and stuff like that, you know, do I worry about him getting beaten down the sideline by Worthy? Absolutely. Do I worry about him sitting back in zone and coming up and making a tackle? Not as much as I did mid-season.
See, that's where I think the advantage is with somebody like EJ. You are worried about them taking the top off, but if you get some help when Worthy's on that side, I think you're going to be in good shape. But well, also, go ahead.
I'm sorry, what do they do with Muhammad? Is he going to shadow Worthy, or is he just going to play one side? And, you know, they moved him around a little bit in the Apple Cup and they were playing him in the slot and doing some different things. And I think that he's one of those guys where if you just say, hey, you take that guy, we're going to trust you. And then I'm going to let everybody else kind of roam free and do
that. You could totally do that, but you can also game plan around where they're lining up. Because in those, you know, when you're between the 20s, whoever Jabbar is guarding, that's a lock. If they're going to put, you know, Xavier Worthy over EJ in that situation, you're going to give him some help over the top. But once you get down, I mean, look what he did at the goal line against Troy Franklin in Husky Stadium, right next to where Jake and I were. Like, he took him out of the game. He he was right there on a poorly thrown ball by Bo Nix. He broke it up. He made sure that Troy didn't make the catch. He's good in those kind of situations. It's when he's, you know, one-on-one against Troy Franklin going down the sidelines for a 45-yard touchdown.
I mean, you can even combo coverage that and say, hey, on his side, we're going to play cover two cloud. We're going to jam him off the line. We're gonna carry him up the seam until help over the top gets there. I would beat the living heck out of him every chance you get.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's only 175 pounds or something like that.
Got to catch him, though.
Yeah, yeah, and you have to get hands on him at the line, too. And that's sometimes, especially with Worthy, that's easier said than done. I mean, he is quick.
Yeah, 100%. You know, and it's probably more of a jamming situation than anything else. But put a wrap on the offensive side of the ball for Texas. I think getting Quinn Ewers off of his spot is going to lead to some errant balls that Washington's going to be able to pick off. And that could really be the difference in the game.
That's tough. Quinn Ewers only has 6 interceptions on the season. So, I mean, that's
okay. So then he goes to captain checkdown.
Sure.
We'll see what happens against Washington before.
I think you're closer to realism with captain checkdown than you are Quinn Ewers throwing a couple of errant balls that get picked off. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibilities, but
so he wins 36-33.
Get your shots in now, man. He
was sacked 25 times this year.
He was sacked 25 times this year. You're absolutely right.
As much as they love to run the RPO and the short safe stuff, when things aren't on schedule, the dude's going to hold the ball and look deep for Worthy, and he's going to try to make the play. He's toned that down from his freshman year, but he's not perfect by any means. Nobody's talking about Quinn Ewers jumping into the NFL draft this year. And there's a reason for that, because he's a product of the system. He's progressing. He's not perfect. And you saw that against Houston. You saw that in the Kansas State game. You saw that in the Texas Tech game. I'm sorry. Like, there's just too many examples. Like, everybody, you know, these Texas fans popping off, man. I don't know if they're bots. I don't know if they're real people. But they just keep harping on, well, you almost lost to ASU. And I'm like, dude, you almost lost to Houston. Chill.
Yeah. You also beat Alabama before Alabama became Alabama.
Before Alabama had a quarterback.
Jalen Milroe was a running back, playing quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, fighting for his life. And the kid, I love that kid, by the way. His progression in the last 6 to 8 weeks of the season was just like, wow. Because, you know, he's following up like a series of first-round quarterbacks that have kind of come out of that system for the last several years. I mean, there's, you know, Tua and Mac Jones and Bryce Young. And, oh, by the way, Jalen Hurts, who's a second-round pick.
Right.
They had some dudes. And this kid's kind of played himself into like, wow. He's got a chance to win a national championship. He's got a chance to maybe play in the league someday. Texas, you know, they got him early, and that's good. And they're a talented team, and they can totally do that. Texas could totally win this game. They could totally win a national championship.
Yeah,
they're not going to. But, you know, they got him early. And the only reason they're in this is because Georgia lost to Alabama.
Yep.
They had to put an SEC team, so Alabama got to go. And the Texas fans were like, well, wait, we beat Alabama. So that's why Texas is here. That's why we're talking about them instead of Florida State or somebody else.
You're 100% correct. Switching over to the defensive side of the ball, obviously every conversation that you're going to have, whether it's listening to somebody online, listening to somebody on the pregame shows, they're going to start with Tavondre Sweat. They're going to move to Byron Murphy, which really throws me for a loop because the real Byron Murphy played for Washington a few years ago. But it's the defensive line, and specifically, and we'll get into this, it's the run defense. They're graded out. Their edges are pretty good at the run game as well. Sweat and Byron Murphy in the middle are NFL caliber players. The passing game is a little bit different story. They don't grade out as well as opposed to what they do against the run. They're still upper half in the pack, the Big 10, the Big 12 when it comes to their PFF grades, but it's not what they are against the run. The teams that were successful against them moved the ball outside just like Washington does. And to go back to what Jake said all the way at the beginning of this podcast about what I said about this being the second best team Washington will have played, win or lose, when because Oregon was the better team. The stats kind of support that in a lot of different ways. We have two teams that played a lot of games ahead. And so, of course, their running efficiency is going to be a lot better because teams were playing from behind and they were running, they were throwing the ball more. But the scoring defense, Oregon was still a better scoring defense. They were 11th in the country, as opposed to Texas, who was 13th in the country. All the other yards and stuff, Oregon and Texas are very similar. You can also throw Utah's run defense in there, which Washington also had success against. They're very similar to that situation. They have higher name ID. They have a higher brand. But the reality is, Texas is kind of a hybrid between Oregon and Utah, two teams which Washington beat three times this year. Two teams that Washington's offense was able to put up over 30 points in all of those games. So we can talk about the ins and outs of this, but this comes down to this story, this narrative is going to be about Washington's offense being able to make plays against any defense that they're going to play against. Coach, you've said it before, you weren't worried about playing Georgia's defense. This isn't Georgia's defense.
No. Like I said, though, they've got dudes, they've got athletes, they got fast linebackers. They've got two really good defensive tackles. You know, the guy I'm really worried about the most, it's not Byron Murphy. By the way, I heard that Britton Covey was told by the Eagles head coach, Nick Sirianni, that he wasn't allowed to watch the Sugar Bowl because of the PTSD that Byron would bring up into his life. So Sweat and Murphy are these two big hosses in the middle who aren't necessarily, pass rush guys. I think Sweat's got like two sacks. Murphy's got like four. But the kid on the outside, I'm totally blanking. I might have to look it up again. Ethan Burke, yeah. Started to get more time in, at the end of the season. He's got 5.5 sacks, but that's their leading sack guy. The thing I'm worried about most with their defense is I was in attendance last year at the Alamo Bowl, and we won the game. It didn't feel like it was close. You know, it kind of got close at the end. It was one score, whatever. But the amount of grabbing and holding they were allowed to do in the secondary against our receivers was like criminal. A couple times where Rome was just running down the middle of the field and got tackled and no flag, whatever. So I feel like that kept the game in sight for Texas so they could try to mount a comeback. If the officials on this large stage going to have the whole country watching us on Monday night alone, if they decide that Texas's overmatched DBs aren't allowed to clutch and grab, lights out, man.
Oh,
because the Texas pass rush, while they're going to have to bring extra people to get home on Michael Penix. That has been the story for every team we have played over the last 2 years. Oregon had to bring safeties. They had to bring Evan Williams. They had to bring linebackers. You know, they had to like disguise their coverages and their blitzes. So they dropped Birch out late and then brought a Evan Williams off the edge just to try to get in our backfield. We've given up almost no sacks over the last 2 years.
And but we have an undersized center that they're going to feast on.
Ask Bear Alexander. I feel like Bear Alexander is as big and athletic as those dudes that Texas has. He may not be as accomplished yet, but physically, he's. If you're going to say, hey, show me what a SEC defensive lineman looks like, it's Bear Alexander.
I'm so glad that you brought that up because I was sitting there listening to it was some halftime show, and they were talking about Devondre Sweat and about how he's the difference for that Texas defense, how he's the showstopper for that Texas defense. And yeah, he is a good player, but that's exactly what pinged in my mind was all these narratives of people talking about how they're going to keep getting through our offensive line to the quarterback that hasn't been touched all season. Yeah. And then they talk about Sweat and how he's going to be the difference in the game. And he's different than any player that Washington's offensive line has seen all season. And then the next day they go out and win the Joe Moore Award as an offensive line unit and about how they're the best offensive line in the nation. And then Texas fans talking about how small Parker Brailsford is and keep going. But yeah. but Texas fans, don't stop, because I want to keep hearing about it.
Yeah, and then Troy Fautanu saying that he's sick of the West Coast, the idea that West Coast football isn't physical, and
McFarland, you don't know anything about Washington football. Tell me you don't know anything about Washington football without telling me.
The absolute joke of it all is that football isn't played in a phone booth where you're like, all right, 330-pound monster, here's a 278-pound center.
Right.
You're locked in one-on-one the whole game. You know what's going to happen is we're going to pull our center, we're going to block down with our tackle, we're going to have Nate Kalepo or Julius Bulow crash into these guys, and we're going to leave them behind because Dylan's going to be going around end. Oh, by the way, we can run duo and have double team, straight up the gut. And now your linebacker is having to tackle Dylan Johnson in the whole one-on-one. It's not a one-on-one game. It is a team game. And I feel pretty good that Parker out on the move on the perimeter is a better advantage than just, well, I got a big guy here and I got a big guy here.
But also, like, I that was in jest, but, like, show me a specific situation where Parker Brailsford has been overmatched.
Hasn't happened yet. Freshman All-American. Most athletic center in America. One of the strongest kids in the weight room, pound for pound.
Yeah.
Been that way since he got onto campus.
And this is the healthiest this offensive line has been. They talk about how Arizona State was able to blitz up the A-gap, but Julius Bulow was not in the game when that happened.
And Parker was playing guard because we had Landon at center.
You're 100% correct.
Bulow leaning on you for four quarters, or Nate Kalepo leaning on you for four quarters, or running Troy Fautanu on a tackle trap, smacking you in the mouth. I'm sorry, those big boys are going to get tired just like anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. I think that's the most interesting part of this entire game is seeing that Texas has these monsters up front, and then seeing that Washington has, they're not just a basketball team on grass, but they do have their monsters up front, and watching. And what we haven't mentioned yet is the advantage that Washington has on the coaching staff.
We'll get there. We'll get there. Trust the show sheet.
Is the fact that, I guess I had a point to that, which was our offensive line is going to outplay their defensive line just based off of where the coaching staff is going to put them in position versus the opposing team, right? Or I trust the fact that our offensive line is going to predominantly be put in better situations than Texas's defensive line is all game long.
Yeah, I heard some inside information that to prepare for these unstoppable defensive tackles, these immovable objects, that after practice, before they flew to NOLA, they had Parker Brailsford pushing the Joe Moore Award trophy back and forth for 100-yard sprint. And I feel like they felt pretty good about the way that he was doing that. So if he can move the trophy.
I heard that the offensive line pushed the plane off the tarmac.
Hey, Coach, are you ready to have a 1-minute conversation? Where does this offensive line stack up to last year now? Because earlier in the year you said, no, they're not better. What do you say now?
So I feel that as the year has gone on, they're probably just as good. Okay, and the reason like that is obviously the tackles are the same and the interior guys changed. I felt like Corey Luciano played head and shoulders above anything I ever expected from him.
Yep.
He was a top 20 center in the nation, and no one saw that coming. And by the way, he was an undersized center. at 285 pounds or whatever he was soaking wet. Henry Bonavalu, I really love that guy. I know that, you know, people had these really high expectations when coming into the program. He had some injuries and stuff, but man, that guy was mauling people. And Jackson, obviously, Kirkland, you know, fought through a lot of stuff. And when he finally settled in, when they stopped trying to make him the left tackle and they finally put Troy back out there and he moved him into guard, everything clicked.
Parker, okay, so that was that wasn't, I guess, a fair question. This offensive line has become just as good.
Because Parker's a better center even now as a freshman. And I feel that Julius took the leap that I never thought he was going to take. Julius is a freaking anchor now. He is a mainstay. And Nate Kaleppo got all that experience last year, and he got jerked around a little bit. And I'm sure he was pretty frustrated with the fact that he lost his job after Jackson came back. But then you slide him back in. We have two ginormous 6'7", 6'8", guards who can move. Julius slimmed himself down, became an athlete again. And like, I feel like this group can push people around. They can get out on the perimeter. They can smack you in the mouth, but they can also out-athlete you.
Yep.
Yeah.
So when you asked me that a month or two ago, I never would have thought that I'd come to this conclusion now where this is the better offensive line.
Julius Bülow still pulling to the right side is one of the coolest pictures I wanted on my wall.
Julius looks like an absolute Spartan god. And when he pulls and you have that guy running directly at you in a straight line, I don't care if you're a linebacker or what you are, you're not gonna hit Julius and knock him anywhere other than on your own back. And just
before this year, he was a big guy on skates with some bad weight, and you know, he struggled with some injuries too. The first image that I ever saw of him when he was still in Hawaii, I said to my now fiance, I said, this kid looks like he belongs on the Avengers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, he was just a machine. And now, all that potential realized, the dude is, you know, he's creating a career for himself now.
Yes, you're absolutely right. We have totally buried the lead. We've been talking about how Washington's going to be able to exploit the running game and talking about how great this offensive line was, which is great. But the biggest mismatch, and you've touched on a little bit, Coach, is the secondary versus this receiving core. I saw a video today. I called it the Joy Bringers. Watching Jalen McMillan catch balls without a knee brace, looking just as spry as he did for the first few weeks of the season and in the Pac-12 championship. There's no holds barred on his knee. This receiving core is back to 100%. You're going to have everybody available, including Giles Jackson, Jalen McMillan at the same time. And you have a secondary that you've kind of touched on. You said they're in shambles. Talk about how Washington dominates this matchup.
Well, I don't think I said they were in shambles, but they do have some injury concerns. I know that Ryan Watt was the kid I was really impressed with last year, the Ohio State transfer. He's a big kid, like 6'3". He's their boundary corner, big physical kid. He looks like Dom Hampton, except he plays corner. He struggled this year with, like, on and off with injuries. I know that they had, you know, 3 or 4 weeks off. I don't know how healthy he is. I've never wished injury upon anybody, but if he doesn't play as much, I won't be heartbroken because he is a beast. The younger Muhammad cousin, obviously Jabbar's little cousin, is a freshman. He's a promising kid, very talented, but you know, taking advantage of younger players is what you are supposed to do when you are a shark. And you know, Coach Grubb is a shark. I said this before, I totally believe this. If the officials don't allow them to get away with the stuff they got away with the Alamo Bowl last year, it's lights out. There's no way they can stay with Rome, stay with Polk, McMillan, Jeremy, Giles, Dylan coming out of the backfield. We haven't seen a whole lot of Dylan catching the ball recently because we haven't needed it. Then you've got Culp and Westover, Cuevas. I think Cuevas at some point during the next couple weeks is going to have one of those explosive plays that nobody saw coming, because he's going to be the second or third tight end in a package, and we're going to go off play action and just hit him down the field. He's so talented. We have too many weapons. If we protect, which we always do, those guys are cooked. Tell me I'm wrong.
I agree with you.
They don't have the size either to compete with Rome, especially on that back shoulder fade that Mike likes to throw. Rome has 3 inches on every single one of their corners. And you mentioned it with Jalen getting healthy. The center of the field is going to get attacked with Jalen, and they don't have the guys to keep up with Jalen, on top of the guys that don't have the size to keep up with Rome.
Or the physicality to keep up with JP.
Right. So the ability to throw the ball on them is going to be there, and which will open up the run later in the game too, which is kind of what Washington's kind of been. That's kind of been their motto the last couple of weeks, is being able to run the ball late is really how they've been able to seal the game. And just watching these receivers, the ability to eat on these Texas cornerbacks is going to be the game changer for that offense.
You know, during the season, I know that obviously we wanted every game to be a win. I feel like as a fan base, we were probably at times distracted. And I think maybe in the middle of the season, I think maybe the coaching staff was a little distracted with getting these numbers for Mike and getting these numbers for Rome and, you know, winning these awards. And, you know, they both finished, you know, in the finals for their respective awards, obviously runner up in the Heisman. And then Rome got kind of screwed up. But this is the postseason. No one gives a shit about numbers.
Yep.
My language. If it takes 5 pass interferences to get down the field and punch it in, I don't give a crap.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just attack these dudes the way we've attacked everybody else. The only way they stop us is if they get to Mike, and we have plans for that. We have max protect packages for that, where Dylan's in, Quentin Moore's in, Westover's in. We can run a 3-man route and still beat you. I'm not worried about it. My thing is, if they don't call the game the right way, then it becomes a slosh fest. Then we have to struggle a little bit. I'll tell you what, though. The identity and the DNA of this team right now is to make it as difficult and uncomfortable as possible and still come out with a win. Because if you win by 1 point, 3 points, 5 points, it's still a victory. I don't think this team all of a sudden is just going to forget that and just say, you know what, we're just going to have a nice, easy win. It's not going to happen. But we win these matchups.
I got to tell you, every time that Kalen DeBoer has time to game plan against another program, it seems to go really well. Boise State was not a terrible team, and Washington made that a laugher real fast. Washington, and you're right, Washington had a chance to go up big on Oregon in the first matchup after a bye, and unfortunately kind of gave it back. But to your point, there's no more situations where Washington is trying to get Mike Penix numbers to get him to New York. That's over. This team, you saw it in the Pac-12 championship. They can be balanced. They take advantage of the situations. They use the middle of the field, which, Coach, you talked about for about 7 weeks straight. And they found ways to win the game. So my question now is, going position by position, who do you think has the advantage? And I'm going to skip quarterback, because I believe that all of us are in agreement that Michael Penix is better than Quinn Ewers. But I want to know, given the situation, which running back room would you take right now?
Running back room, Texas. Starting running back, us.
Okay.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Okay. Receivers.
Washington. All day. Easy.
Well, I will say this. It's not a blowout. For the first time, you know, one of the few times, I should say, all year long, it's not like an overwhelming, like, they got some dudes, man.
Yeah,
they do, but I don't think that their dudes are any better than Oregon's dudes.
I think Oregon's dudes might be a little bit better.
Yeah.
They have one guy who's like scares you as far as just the explosive element over the top. But unlike Troy Franklin, Troy could do it all over the field, short, intermediate, deep routes. and Worthy is like a gadget play guy, and then he's going to run a nine route on you.
Right, and then Tez Johnson, if he got into space, he was very, very effective.
That was so annoying.
Yep. Tight end is tough because I think that I would favor Washington if it came to overall receiving and blocking. But I think if you break it down, you know, Sanders is such a good receiving tight end, but Washington's tight ends have just been so reliable all year. What do you guys think?
On pure talent, Sanders beats an entire room of 80% of all the teams out there.
Right.
Like he's just, he's a five-star kid. He's a future NFL guy. He's a monster. The way not many tight ends in the country are utilized as, you know, frequently as he is on screens, tight end screens, just their boot action stuff, their play action stuff. They find ways to get him the ball, but I mean, he's a beast, and that's no slight to Devin Culp, Quentin Moore, and Jack Westover. It's just talent.
No, he's a beast. The only thing that Sanders doesn't have is the touchdown numbers. He's only got two touchdowns all season.
That's a problem. Texas just doesn't score a lot. They're low, especially in the red zone. They struggle in the red zone, correct?
Yeah, in Washington, I just had his name. Westover had what, 3-1 game? So I don't know. I mean, yeah, Sanders has a lot more receiving yards than our tight end room does, but our touchdown numbers are exponentially higher than theirs. So I wouldn't put it out of the realm that you could pick Washington's tight end room.
Sanders averages almost 16 yards a catch. Which is the biggest deal because our guys are outlet guys. They're, you know, safety valve.
Yeah.
Short stuff.
Devin Culp's almost 13. He's 12-9.
Yeah. With a lot smaller volume, I guess.
Yeah.
Sanders is just a dude. 6'4", 240 some odd pounds. Probably runs a 4.6. I mean,
he's offensive line.
Washington.
Yep.
Yeah.
Joe Moore agrees with you.
That's not saying Texas is bad. They got a couple dudes, and that Banks kid is. If someone offered me the chance to say, hey, you know, you've got this kid Cross in Seattle, and he's a first, you know, number 9 overall pick, or you could swap him out next year for Banks, I'd be tempted. I think this kid's going to be legit.
Interior defensive line.
Texas,
right? That's
yeah.
Tooley's great. Fatu's great.
Sweat moves the scale a little bit towards Texas. Edge. He's that NFL. I don't know about Edge.
I go Washington.
Do you coach?
Yeah, because while Texas has a bunch of highly regarded players on their roster, the production's not there.
Yeah.
Not yet. And they've got some young dudes.
And they've played against teams that have been dropping back to pass a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I'll take Braylon Trice. I'll take ZTF. I'll take maybe.
Sakai?
Yeah. I will take.
Voight?
Maybe a certain guy who will be making his debut.
Durfee.
And this.
Texas. Ethan Burke has 5.5 sacks, which is more than Braylon Trice has. I mean, they have numbers.
We're going to talk about sacks. We're going to talk about overall pressures, production. You know, Braylon Trice, that kid can't wipe Braylon Trice's booty. I'm sorry. There's just no way they're in the same category. He's a promising kid. Braylon Trice is an NFL dude right now playing college football.
Linebacker.
Texas. And that's... Yeah. That's just because overall, I think their speed is better than ours. Eddie's a solid player. Alfonso's a solid player. I think Carson Bruner is positioning himself to be one of those like all conference type guys in the Big Ten next year. Texas linebackers, and I'm dropping names here because it's late. The kid who was, I remember last year doing prep for the Alamo Bowl. He was the Ford. Was it Ford? The kid who was runner-up as Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year last year, the middle linebacker, very athletic kid. Not a thumper, but good in coverage, good at making tackles. really, just a really good player. I would definitely say that they have the advantage there.
Corners.
Washington.
Washington. And
that's not close.
I agree. Jamar Mohamed.
Yeah.
He's the best corner on the field.
For me, it depends on if Ryan Watt's going to play, if he's 100%. Because if he is, then it kind of swings it to sort of a neutral for me.
And then the final spot, safety. Actually, not the final spot, safety.
I really don't think their safeties have done much, honestly. Yeah. Especially with all the injuries. I like where our safety room is right now. I think too. That they're healthy and they're experienced and they're playing really well right now. So I would take ours.
With Asa Turner coming back, it has to swing in the favor of Washington. If he can make a play or two to help Washington seal a victory, then I feel good about it.
I'll take Cam. I'll take Dom, and I'll take Asa. I like those three. At least
Cam Cobb gets an interception in this game. Going to buy Lumpia the next day.
Let's go. Now, the last one that we haven't really talked about, I think special teams, both Washington and Texas are really good at kick coverage and kick return. And if my life depended on it, I would trust Grady Gross to make a 42-yard field goal. However, Texas's field goal kicker is Nails. His last name is Auburn. I really, really hope that this game doesn't come down to a kick in the mid-50s because I don't want to see him. I don't want to see Auburn in a situation where he can win the game with his leg.
Well, his long on the season is 54. So if it's in the mid-50s, potentially the longest that he'd have all season.
Yeah, don't care. I don't want to see it.
And he's only 2 for 4 over 50. So, I mean, yeah, you're right. He is Nails. He's 82% field goal success rate this season. But, you know, over 50... Yeah, I would rather see than Burt Auburn with a 50-yard field goal to win it for Texas is Grady Gross with a 32-yarder for Washington to win.
I'd take that.
That's what I want to see.
I'd take that.
I mean, the kid, I remember looking at his photo last year before the game and thinking, Sideshow Bob? That wild hair. He's a good kicker. He was a good kicker last year, but he was still kind of young. I mean, he's absolutely been Nails this year. What, 82%?
Yeah.
54, obviously. He's got the range. I don't want to see that kid trotting on the field in a tying game or with a chance to, you know, tie the game or just I don't want to deal with that stuff. So it's our job to make sure that he doesn't become a factor.
Yeah. The last matchup, and that's the coaching staffs. Jake, you started to get into it a little bit before. Washington fans know Steve Sarkisian. We can talk about the change in Steve since he left Washington, but you saw a little bit of the crazy last year when he started yelling at the guy that was trying to keep him back, acting like a jerk off about that. There was, I see a coach who is calm, has done it before at multiple levels, has played in multiple big games and won them. And I have another coach who beat Alabama once, and I'm having a hard time thinking of another signature win. I'm seeing two coaches that are on, that are obviously at the peak of their career right now in the college football playoff. But I see one who knows that has a track record to prepare. Where does Steve Sarkisian and the staff have any sort of advantage over this Washington staff?
Pete Kwiatkowski.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think he's going to – we didn't talk about this earlier. I think he's going to slow things down. He's going to try to make us kind of not take the shots necessarily, just kind of check up and you know, lay up and see, you know, if we can go on 13, 15-play drives to score instead of, you know, 3 plays and done. I think Steve hiring him was probably one of his best moves. And when he first got to Texas, obviously people were enraged and thought the defense was trash and whatnot. That's his big advantage. That's his calming point. Steve's a really high-strung guy. He might be an offensive genius, and he might have always been an offensive genius. And I love the stuff he did when he was at UW and at USC and at Alabama when he was the offensive coordinator. As far as just a head coach, I still think he's wound too tightly.
Yeah.
I think Kalen DeBoer has just been there, done that. He has 100% buy-in from his players who are on the field. I think that, you know, we give, you know, as fans, we complain about coaches a lot. You know, this position coach, this coordinator, this, and this. There's a whole segment of Washington fans who thought, you know, Coach Grubb was trash for about four games there in a row. I still think our staff is better.
You're looking at, I just want to look at Washington records. Sarkisian was able to recruit some five-star athletes and was always really good at recruiting. You're looking at an overall win-loss when Sarkisian was at the University of Washington, a 34-29. It's not great records. His overall coaching as a head coach, his overall record, 71-48, is okay. You move to Kalen DeBoer, and he has two losses as a Washington head coach. He has 11 losses as a head coach spanning over years. His tournament record in the NAIA was 17-2. His second year at Washington, he's gone undefeated, taking them to the CFP. And Coach had just mentioned it before. You watch DeBoer on the sideline, there's just a demeanor about him. He's calm, cool, and collected. And it shows, I alluded to this earlier, you have players that are not playing in bowl games or suiting up in bowl games because they've entered the transfer portal. Dylan Morris enters the transfer portal, and because Kalen DeBoer asked him as a favor to stick with the team and write it out, see this thing through, there's so much respect in that room for Kalen DeBoer that Dylan Morris goes, absolutely, I'll hang out and I'll help you and I'll help us win. And it just shows the moxie and the ability to help these young men out, that they respect and love him so much. The win, was it the Oregon? What game was it that ZTF?
USC.
USC win, where ZTF just falls into DeBoer's arms and they're hugging, and you can see the emotion on both of their faces. And that shows how much they truly love each other. So long story short, Kalen DeBoer, 100 out of 100 times, twice on Sundays, twice on Saturdays, I guess.
Or Mondays.
Yeah.
Okay, here comes score predictions. Coach, go ahead and go first.
Man, I've been thinking about this a lot. And every time I come up with this really confident prediction, it's a lot closer than what I said it was. So I'm going to try something new today. I'm going to try to predict a close score so we can blow out Texas on Monday. My honest to goodness take, though, is that we're like the Seahawks a little bit, except we're better as far as, you know, competition. We like to play close games for some reason. If we get a 10-point lead on Oregon, we'll let you guys come back and score in about 10 seconds to make it, you know, so we have to run out the clock. But we're still going to win. Don't worry about it. We got you. But in this game, Washington 38, Texas 35.
Texas by 6. No, I'm just kidding. Oh, forget that. I like Coach. I have put a lot of thought into this. Fortunately for me, Christmas came at a time of a truly, it was a blessing because it distracted my mind from this game just long enough to give me only 5 days of Jake turning into this mental midget that we all have grown to know and love. But the last 4 days have absolutely been terrifying up in Jake's brain. You couldn't last a day up here, Trev. it's gone back and forth. We started the podcast. I got to looking at the size of these receivers for Texas, and I go, oh gosh, we're going to get just drudgeoned on the outside. Our corners are going to just – but I thought that going into the Pac-12 championship game too. I was not the most optimistic person in the world when it came to that game. With that being said, I do think Washington is a better football team. I do think we're better coached. It is going to be a home game for Texas, but I do think we win 28-24.
I will stay with the fact that Washington is playing their second best opponent of the year. No shade to Arizona, who seems to be super duper good as well. But if I say that they're the second best team Washington has played, I think it would be a pretty good game between Oregon and Texas. I believe Washington will double their win by beating them by 6. So I believe it's going to be 38-32 Washington. We've all picked Washington to win the game. Who will they be facing on January 8th?
For me, it's Alabama. Alabama looks to me, let's talk eye test here. Eye test, Alabama looks to me like they're the best team in the nation right now. The way that they kind of just manhandled Georgia after not seeing Georgia get manhandled all season. They look really good. So I think Alabama beats the shit out of Michigan.
You know, I was kind of on the fence about this, and up until the Cotton Bowl tonight, I was thinking, you know, Michigan's pretty good. They got a really good defense, and they run the ball, and sure, they don't have a lot of explosive guys on the outside, but they've found a way to, like, dominate play. And I know they haven't played a ton of teams, but they handled Ohio State. They handled Penn State. Okay, good. Ohio State's trash. And I know they didn't have the starting quarterback.
It was Penn State. Marvin
Harrison, whatever. But Penn State, yeah, we didn't think that they were very good, you know, defensively, whatever. I don't even think Bama's that great. But golly, you know, I don't think we're going to be that fortunate if we win on Monday to play Michigan.
I agree.
I think we're going to have to slay the giant.
Yeah.
That's the only way Washington's going to get respect is if they go out and beat Nick Saban in Alabama on January 8th.
Is this the 2016 revenge tour?
What's that?
Is this the 2016 revenge tour?
Jake Browning Bowl.
But I will say this. Alabama is flawed. Michigan has a really good defense that can maybe, if they can find a way to contain Jalen Milroe in the pocket and not let him escape and do the things that he wants to do, I think it'll be a really, you know, tight game. If they can't, it's going to be TCU all over again.
Yeah, I believe maybe not a TCU score, but I think that Alabama really exposes Michigan for what they are. They have of the four quarterbacks, they have the fourth best quarterback in the playoff. I just don't see how Michigan is going to be able to move the ball enough to score against, you know, Jaden Milroe, who's become a really good quarterback over the course of the year. And they're just a more explosive offense, and they still have the SEC bigs. So I think it's going to be Washington, Alabama in the championship. We'll get through this game. We'll talk about it. We'll preview the next one as we get there.
I was going to say, the Kool-Aid versus Rome matchup in the national championship game is going to be
awesome.
Love that.
Yes.
For Trevor Mueller, Jake Grant, Coach V, go Dogs.
Go Dogs. Go Dogs.
Let's fucking go.
Husky Nation, it's the end of the third quarter. Are you looking for the perfect tequila for your next get-together? The answer is Born from a Hero. Hero de Leon. Direct from the prestigious Murguia family just outside Guadalajara, honoring their great-grandfather who saved Mexico from a horrible civil war. It's authentic, courageous, with great integrity, just like the general. Enjoy the smoothest Blanco tequila you've ever tasted, or the rich flavor of our Reposado, aged for 7 months in American bourbon barrels. Or the ultimate tequila, our Añejo, which is aged for 18 months in the same bourbon oak barrels. Go to your favorite liquor retailer or restaurant and ask for Hero de Leon, because it's always the end of the third quarter. Imported by Zombie Beverages, Mercer Island, Washington.